personal, as the following, which was a personal message, is applicable to very many. I give it for the benefit of all. Dear brother, a blank. I recollect your countenance among several others that were shown me in vision in Rochester, New York, December 25, 1865. I was shown that you were upon the background. Your judgment is convinced that we have the truth, but you have not as yet experienced the sanctifying influence of the truth. You have not followed closely the footsteps of our Redeemer, therefore are unprepared to walk even as he walked. As you listen to the words of truth, your judgment says it is correct. It cannot be gainsaid. But immediately the unsanctified heart says, "These are hard sayings. Who can hear them?" That you had better give up your efforts to keep pace with the people of God, for new and strange and trying things will be continually arising. You will have to stop sometime, and you may just as well stop now, and better than to go any further. You cannot consent to profess the truth and not live it. You have ever admired a life consistent with profession. I was shown a book. Your name was written in it with many others. Against your name was a black blot. You were looking upon this and saying, "It can never be effaced." Jesus held his wounded hand above it and said, "My blood alone can efface it. If thou wilt from henceforth choose the path of humble obedience, and rely solely upon the merits of my blood to cover thy past transgressions, I will blot out thy transgressions and cover thy sins. But if you choose the path of transgressors, you must reap the transgressor's reward. The wages of sin is death. I saw evil angels surrounding you, seeking to divert your mind from Christ, causing you to look at God as a God of justice, and losing sight of the love, compassion, and mercy of a Saviour crucified, but would save to the uttermost all that come unto him. If we sin, said the angel, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. When under the pressure of mental anxieties, when you are hearkening to the suggestions of Satan, and murmuring and complaining, some ministering angel is commissioned to bear you the succor you need, and put to shame the language of your unbelieving mind. You distrust God. You disbelieve in his power to save to the uttermost. You dishonor God by this cruel unbelief, and cause yourself much needless suffering. I saw heavenly angels surrounding you, driving back the evil angels, and looking with sorrow and pity upon you, and pointing you to heaven, the crown of immortality, saving. He that would win must fight. Although you have been in doubt and perplexity, you have not dared to venture to entirely sever the connecting link between you and God's commandment-keeping people. You have not yet yielded all for the truth's sake. You have not yet yielded yourself, your own will. You fear to lay yourself and all that you have upon the altar of God. You fear that you may be required of him to yield back to God some portion of that which he has lent you. Heavenly angels are well aware of our words and actions, and even of the thoughts and intents of the heart. You, dear brother, have too many fears that the truth would cost you too much. But this is one of Satan's suggestions. Let it take all that you possess, and it does not cost too much. The value received, if rightly estimated, is an eternal weight of glory. How small is that which is required of us? Little is the sacrifice that we can make in comparison with that which our divine Lord made for us. And yet a spirit of murmuring comes over you because of the cost of everlasting life. You have had severe conflicts, as well as others of your brethren at B blank, with the great adversary of souls. You have several times nearly yielded the conflict, but the influence of your wife and daughter has prevailed.
These members of your family would obey the truth with their whole heart. Could they have your influence to sustain them? Your daughters look to you for example. They think their father must be right. Their salvation depends much upon the course which you pursue. If you cease striving for everlasting life, you will carry your children to a great degree with you, will bow down the spirit of your faithful wife, crush her hopes, and lessen her hold on life. How can you, in the judgment, meet these to testify that your unfaithfulness proved their ruin?
Several times I saw that you had yielded to the suggestions of Satan to cease striving to live out the truth. For the tempter told you that you would fail with the best endeavors you might make, and with all your weakness and failings, it was impossible for you to maintain a life of devotion and prayer. I was shown that your wife and eldest daughter have been your good angels, to grieve over you, to encourage you to resist in a measure the powerful suggestions of Satan. And through your love to them, you have been induced to again try to fix your trembling faith upon the promises of God. Satan is waiting to overthrow you that he may exult over your downfall. And those who are trampling underfoot the law of God, you strengthen in their rebellion. It is impossible for you to be strong until you take a decided stand for the truth. Systematic benevolence looks to you as needless. You overlook the fact that it originated with God, whose wisdom and judgment is unerring. This plan he ordained to save confusion, to correct covetousness, avariciousness of spirit, selfishness, and idolatry. This system was to cause the burden to rest lightly, yet with due weight upon all. The salvation of man cost a dear price, and God has so ordained that man should aid his fellow man in the great work of redemption. If he excuses himself from this, he is unwilling to deny himself, that others may be partakers with him of the heavenly benefit. He proves himself unworthy of the life to come, unworthy of the heavenly treasure which cost so great a sacrifice, even the life of the Lord of glory, which he freely gave to lift man from degradation and to exalt him to become heir of the world. God wants no unwilling offerings, no pressed sacrifice. Those who appreciate the work of God, those who are thoroughly converted, will give the little required of them cheerfully and consider it a privilege to bestow. Said the angel, "Abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul." The health reform you have stumbled at, it looks to you to be a needless appendix to the truth. It is not so. It is a part of the truth. Here is a work before you which will come closer and be more trying than anything which has yet been brought to bear upon you. While you hesitate and stand back, failing to lay hold upon the blessing it is your privilege to experience, you suffer loss. You are stumbling over the very blessing which heaven has placed in your path, designed to make your progress less difficult. The very things which will prove the greatest blessing to you, Satan determines to present before you in the most objectionable light, that you may combat that which would prove for your physical and spiritual health. Of all men, you are one to be benefited with health reform. The truth received on every point in this matter of reform will be of the greatest advantage. You are a man that a spare diet will benefit. You were in danger of being stricken down in a moment by paralysis, and one half of you becoming dead. A denial of appetite is salvation to you, while you view it as a great privation. Why the youth of the present age are not more religiously inclined is because of the defect in their education. It is not true love which is exercised toward children to permit in them the indulgence of passion, or permit disobedience of your laws to go unpunished. Just as the twig is bent, the tree inclines. A mother should ever have the cooperation of the father in her efforts to lay the foundation for a good Christian character in her children. A doting father should not close his eyes to the faults of his children
because it is not pleasant to administer correction. You both need to arouse, and with firmness, not in a harsh manner, but with determined purpose, let your children know they must obey you. A father must not be a child, moved merely by impulse. A father is bound to his family by sacred, holy ties. Every member of the family centers in the father. His name is houseband, the true definition of husband. He is the lawmaker, illustrating in his own manly bearing sterner virtues, energy, integrity, honesty, and practical usefulness. The father, in one sense, is the priest of the household, laying upon the altar of God the morning and evening sacrifice, the wife and children uniting in prayer and praise. With such a household, Jesus will tarry, and through his quickening influence, your joyful exclamations shall yet be heard, and amid higher and more lofty scenes, saying, "Behold I, and the children whom thou hast given me." Saved, saved, eternally saved, escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust, and through the merits of Christ become heirs of immortality.
I saw that, but few fathers realize the responsibility resting upon them. They have not learned to control themselves, and until this lesson is learned, they will make poor work in governing their children. Perfect self-control will act as a charm upon the family. When this is attained, a great victory is gained. Then can they educate their children to self-control. My heart yearns over the church at B blank, for there is a work to be accomplished there. It is God's design to have a people in that place. There is material there for a good church, but there is considerable work to be done to remove the rough edges and prepare them for working order, that all may labor unitedly and draw in even cords. It has hitherto been the case when one or two feel the necessity of arousing and standing unitedly and more firmly upon the elevated platform of truth, that a portion will not make efforts to arise. Satan puts in them a spirit to rebel, to discourage those who would advance. They brace themselves when urged to take hold of the work, and a stubborn spirit comes upon some, and when they should help, they hinder. Some will not submit to the planing knife of God. As it passes over them, and the uneven surface is disturbed, they complain of too close and severe work. They wish to get out of God's workshop, where their defects may remain undisturbed. They seem to be asleep as to their condition, but their only hope is to remain where the defects in their Christian character will be seen and remedied. Some are indulging lustful appetite which wars against the soul, which is a constant drawback, a hindrance to their spiritual advancement. They bear an accusing conscience constantly and are prepared, if straight truths are talked, to be hit. They feel condemned, and as though subjects had been purposely selected to hit their case. They feel grieved and injured, and withdraw themselves from the assemblies of the saints. They forsake the assembling of themselves together, for then their consciences are not so disturbed. They soon lose their interest in the meetings and their love for the truth, and, unless they entirely reform, will go back and take their position with the rebel host who stand under the black banner of Satan. If all these will crucify fleshly lusts which war against the soul, they will get out of the way, where the arrows of truth will pass harmlessly by them. While they indulge lustful appetite, cherish their idols, they make themselves a mark for the arrows of truth to hit, and if truth is spoken at all, they must be wounded. Satan tells some that they cannot reform, that health would be sacrificed should they make the attempt, and leave the use of tea, tobacco, and flesh meats. This is the suggestion of Satan. It is these hurtful stimulants which are surely undermining the constitution and preparing the system for acute diseases by impairing nature's fine machinery, battering down her fortifications erected against disease and premature decay. Those who make a change and leave of these unnatural stimulants
will for a time feel their loss and suffer considerably without them, as does the drunkard who is wedded to his liquor. Take away intoxicating drinks, and he feels terribly. But if he persists, he will soon overcome the dreadful lack he suffers. Nature will again come to his aid and remain at her post until he again substitutes, in the place of nature, the false prop. Some have so benumbed the fine sensibilities of nature that it may require a little time for her to recover from the abuse she has been made to suffer through the wrong and sinful habits of man, through the indulgence of an acquired, depraved appetite, which has depressed and weakened her powers. Give nature a chance, and she will rally and again perform her part nobly and well. The indulgence of these idols is destructive to health and has a benumbing influence upon the brain, making it impossible to appreciate eternal things. They cannot rightly value the salvation Christ has wrought out for them by a life of self-denial, continual suffering, and reproach, and finally yielding his own sinless life to save perishing man from death.